Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Kara Olson, Chief People Officer for Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94 between Highway 164 and Highway F in Ridgeview Corporate Park, and in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building across from Winkies. We also service clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. Visit ellenbecker.com for more details. Today, I have the pleasure of having Eric Papp as my guest. Eric is the founder of Agape Leadership, is an effectiveness expert, keynote speaker, and management trainer. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Hey, Kara. Thank you very much for having me. Great to be with an HR expert.
Well, thank you. I'm really excited. You know, as we were chatting, you know, being in human resources and in the people field for a long time, you know, over 25 plus years, I have read a number of leadership and culture and business books as truly people and trust and culture are the foundation of success. And so it's incredibly rewarding, you know, in my field and in others to be part of watching and being part of people's individual growth and their path to success. And that's why I'm really excited about having you on the show today. You recently wrote another, and I'm stressing another book. You've written a number of books about people and leadership. And this one in particular is called Managing Promises, Not People, How to Create a Self-Managing Team. It's a great title, right? And it's really a guide to improving leadership effectiveness and cultivating that whole culture of trust that's so important. So I'm excited. So maybe you start by telling us a little bit about yourself, your background, and truly how you got started.
Yeah. So I am from Tampa, Florida. That's where I currently live. My formal education came from the University of Notre Dame, where I got a degree in business management. My self-education continues every day. I'd share with you just before we got on the show here, I'm usually going through about a book every 3 to 7 days. I taught the FBI speed reading in 2009 when I worked as a management trainer for a company. Well, fun fact. So I'm always absorbing stuff, reading something, listening to something, because I'm constantly making observations or connections or, you know, trying to simplify things as well. So yeah, Tampa, Florida, wife, Brianne, son, Cole, who's 21 months, Ellie is 4 years old. So two kids. And what else? Hobbies, what's important to me, faith, family, fitness. I do have a Peloton here, so that way it's great to get on that when the kids are taking a nap or
absolutely,
you know, or heavy exercise resistance bands. You know, it's good to just kind of a good stress reliever, but also it's good to take care of the body.
Sure.
So yeah, that's a bit about myself. And in the past 15 years, I've spent as a management trainer going into companies, working with primarily what people would call the soft skills, like, okay, the blue collar workers are not talking to the white collar workers. There's a lack of trust. Okay, then we get into, you know, what's healthy conflict versus unhealthy conflict, communication, you know, so those just different areas, team building events, one day retreats. So kind of runs the gamut. And so did that for about 15 years. I mean, I still do that, you know, but now it's more so keynotes at conferences. And then it's still training inside of companies. My clients range from like State Farm, everybody knows the commercials on TV, to like the NIH, to the American Lighting Association. So it kind of runs the gamut. I always like to think, and it kind of shows to people, you know, you are unique, but your challenges are not. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we like to think as humans, like, oh my gosh, nobody understands what I'm going through right now with my department or with my team or with my business. It's like, yeah, there's probably about a million other people that have gone through that. And so really, let's talk about it. Let's get it out in the open and let's start, you know, pulling some of those obstacles into opportunities. So
right. No, that's great. You've got a very busy home life, personal life, and all the things that you've done since then, right? You know, I mean, especially getting into it, being an author and being that keynote, those keynote speaking opportunities, really, really neat. When you look at what was, you know, kind of that pivotal or turning point for your career?
My turning point was when I linked up with a seminar company. It was one of the nation's largest seminar companies. It's still in existence today because I think it bought somebody other else out. It was called Skill Path Seminars. Mm. And I worked with them as an independent contractor, and I would go all around the country putting on one day events on leadership, team building, managing multiple priorities, objectives, and deadlines. I put on these one day seminars, and that was a tremendous turning point for me because it really exposed me to a lot of different industries, people, a lot of different job titles. And then that's where, like, I could really see challenges and being able to see things quickly, diagnose it, being able to read people, and then also ultimately being able to transfer a skill or knowledge to them. And sometimes, even though they wouldn't want it, like, I would do seminars and people would come up to me with their arms crossed and they'd say, hey, just so you know, my boss sent me here. I don't want to be here. And I just want to let you know that. And it was like, I do get that. And that always kind of motivated me because it was like, that person that says you can't do it. It's like, okay, let me go and prove them wrong. And then my right. goal was, you know, to turn them around. But then the day they're giving me a high five or a hug and they're like, man, I could see how this all really is going to help me professionally. And, you know, with the challenges that I'm going on at work, but also personally as well. And that's really what it's all about. I think you get that too, right? Being an HR, being a chief people person, is that really at the end of the day, you know, it's not what we sell, what we produce, but it's the impact that we make. And that's really it is it going to make someone's life easier? Is it going to help them be a better person? Be, you know, as Matthew Kelly would say, becoming the better version of themselves, mm-hmm. then that's the whole idea.
Right. I love the arms crossed, right? And then going right to then a high five, right? Those are those moments where, you know, you've made that impact. And I think you said it really well, right? You know, any industry, you know, across, you know, the population, you know, people are people. And so there's some very similar challenges that we face. You know, when you think about those, what do you think is a challenge that leaders face today? What are some of those obstacles that you see as you talk to leaders?
There's a lot, but I'll just touch on some of the big ones that I see. One is the rate and the speed of technology and change. It's at an accelerated pace, right? And ever since the microprocessor came out, like in the 1967 or something like that, like technology or something like doubled every 14 months or something. And so we're seeing the compound of that and now AI. And so I think a lot of leaders are curious or fearful perhaps of how they're going to include AI or technology changes into what they already do, how they can use that to maximize their production of what they do. So I think that's a big thing in terms of that, you know, that skill set alone. Another skill set or another thing that I see with leaders is, you know, folks that are coming to the marketplace today have kind of a short-term transactional thinking in their head, like new graduates, if you will. And you might see this at your company, kind of like, what can you do for me? I'm not going to be here. Like you're talking about 2 or 3 years. Whoa, let's just talk about 6 months or a year. And it used to be before, like, long-term employment was like 20 years, right? You get the watch, but then it was like 10 years and then like 7 years. Now it's like 3 years. And so there's a lot of short-term transactional strategic thinking that I think employees have. And so employers is that challenge of, okay, how do we get them to buy in? How do we create a culture that even though we're not going to pay as much as someone over here, but they're going to love it because they know that our culture is so strong. Our employees, they hang out with each other outside of work. So I think another challenge for leaders is how do you build a strong culture? You know, how do you have that where people want to come to work? They want to be a part of your team. So technology, change, culture, all those, some of the challenges that go in. And then the last one, of course, is the leadership style, right? It's not being able to micromanage, supervise. Those days are over. So it's, and I had this in the book, it's the management question. Is you tell people, hey, do you want me to manage you or should I manage what you tell me? And almost everyone says, oh, manage what I tell you. Well, great. Well, then therefore there could be some bumps along the way because, you know, if you tell your boss, hey, you're going to be here at 9 o'clock and then you're not there at 9:30, well, then now we need to have a conversation around that. And so that's where I see, you know, going to in terms of some of the challenges and some of what's coming down the pike.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And it really leads right into to the book, right around managing what someone tells you. And that's really that mind shift, you know, that change of maybe how leaders have managed in the past and an effective way to build trust, manage a new workforce as well, and really be successful. So I think that's really helpful to hear that for sure. So we're going to take just a short break. And when we return, Eric will share what has inspired this project and how it's really different than other projects that he's done in the past. So we'll be back right after a short break. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Kara Olson, Chief People Officer at Ellen Becker Investment Group. My guest today is Eric Papp, founder of Agape Leadership. He's an effectiveness expert, keynote speaker, and management trainer. So as promised, we're going to dive into the approach Eric took with this project and why. So Eric, tell us, what inspired this project and what have been the results or outcomes so far?
Yeah, so I've been around management, leadership for a while now. I wrote my first book 2012 called Leadership by Choice. And came out with Wiley and Sons. And so I've always been thinking, reading a lot of stuff. How do we simplify it? How do you know, what does it really matter? What does it really come down to? And I heard someone mention sometime, like they said, what's your management style? And this was, I was in the audience and someone said, I don't manage people. I manage their promises to me. And I thought that was, I heard this like 10 years ago and I thought, wow, like, man. And then that's where then I came up like, okay, manage promises, not people. And that's where it was like, yeah, that's what it's all about. Like if we're all adults, we should be able to go off each other's word. We should be able to just, hey, I'm going to be here at 9 o'clock, or I'm going to give you this report, or I said, I'm going to bring in 10 clients into the firm, you know, in the next 3 months. And I did it. And so it's like being able to honor our word. And so that's where it was like, how do we make it simple? And also before this book, I wrote the book called Three Values of Being an Effective Person. It became a national bestseller, yard sales all around the country. That means it didn't do good. But that brings me up for another topic as well, is like, cause that I wrote that like in 2014 and then that didn't do well. So I just stopped writing. And that's another thing we could come back to. It's like, no, you just have to keep putting stuff out there. But anyhow, so that's kind of what inspired me, was just when I heard that comment by that person, then what stuck with me was I created this, okay, manage promises, not people. And then I had this idea and then I wrote the book Three Values, because it really goes in with our value system. If we have a similar value system, right? And I talk about this in the book, integrity, responsibility, generosity, then we can manage each other's promise, right? And we don't have to, you know, be on top of each other, supervise, micromanage. And so, yeah, that's really, I was like, man. And also too, that's been eating at me, like I said, for about eight, 10 years now to write this. And finally, last year or two, I was like, you know what, I'm going to do it. And I think one of the biggest things, too, is when you're trying to do a project. I read this somewhere that like 80% of people or 81% of people want to write a book and don't write a book, is just chip away at it, like really get a good outline. And I learned that from James Patterson, watching some classes on writing on him. He always talks about the outline. I'm a big James Patterson fan. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of leadership fiction, you know, nonfiction books, but then also I read a lot of James Patterson books because I, you know, it's like drinking a light beer. You love mm-hmm. it. It's good. You know, it goes down easy. And his chapters are so like one or two pages.
Right.
And he stresses the importance of outline. So that's where I went back. I was like, you know, let me rein it in. Let's get a good outline together. And then let's press the go button. When I first had my outline, it was not good. It was like, I was talking around the subject, but I wasn't really actually talking about the actual managed promises, not people. Now, I mean, like the chapters, okay, you know, standards of behavior, you know, management by promises, honor your word, impact of not honoring your word, the never-ending process of honoring your word, how to stay committed and overcome procrastination, or excuse me, for perfectionism. So a lot of it's tightened it with that.
Right.
So yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, no, that's helpful to understand just kind of where it was really inspired from. And thank goodness that, you know, you took a break after 8 years and then came back to it, right? I mean, I think that's another message in itself to say, hey, there's opportunity. You might put something at the side, but yet having the resolve and the courage to come back to, and thank goodness you did, right? So that we have the knowledge that you have as well and sharing, you know, your things that you've learned and that you share with other leaders.
Yeah, and I think there's two takeaways there. One is listen to that voice inside you. I think we all have the voice inside us. We all have projects, we have books, things that just kind of keep gnawing at us. Like, hey, you want to do this? Like, you get inspired, like, hey, you should write this. Hey, you should create this. So listen to yourself, right? Really listen to that voice and then start to take action on that. Second thing is don't do what I did. Don't wait too long. Don't wait 10 years, 8 years. Like, learn from my mistakes. Just jump in, you know, start before you're ready. And I think, so those are the two key takeaways. One is don't do like Eric did and take too long. Because I looked at it recently, like one of the people I look up to in the leadership space, John Maxwell, you know, and all the books that he's written. And I recently came across like his Wikipedia page and I saw that he had written, I think, 8 or 9 books before the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, like the one that's like put him on the map.
Right.
And so I thought, wow, that's a great example. Like, you have to keep creating. You don't know which one's going to hit or going to pop. And so just keep creating, keep writing. So now I'm working on another project right now that I'm really excited about. And, you know, it's definitely not going to take me 8 years to get the next book out.
So. Well, that's good. And I know we'll spend a little bit of time on that as well. So when you think back, especially, you know, as you were just chatting and pieces of advice, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received? And I'm curious to know who gave that advice to you.
Oh man, that's tough. I mean, to single it, to narrow it down. I mean, I can just say the first thing that comes to mind is my dad and what he's always told me and what he still practices, you know, is stay curious. He's always big with curiosity. And I think that is a key element just for us all, because we get so stuck up on problems and then we try one or two solutions. Then we just like, we develop like a learned helplessness. And we just say, oh, that's the way it is. Or, oh, I've tried everything. Or, oh, I can't do it. Life sucks. This sucks, whatever. So when you stay curious, you stay open. You stay open to new ideas, new perspectives, new approaches. And curiosity lends itself to innovation, creation, you know, creativity, collaboration. So I would say stay curious is one of the biggest things, you know, of keeping us moving forward. And it takes us also out of ourselves, like, you know, going from like, you know, just not how I can do this or how, you know, by ourselves, but really who can I collaborate with? Who could I talk to? And curiosity lends itself to that.
Absolutely. Well, and I feel like even through your book, Eric, you know, there were parts around that, around being curious as a leader and asking questions that really, you know, enables trust and is cultivating trust because of that just a solid nature of being curious versus judgmental, right? And so I think that whole concept came through this book as well.
Yeah, 100%. You know, as human beings, we judge unconscious, unbeknownst to ourselves, right? It's something like when you meet somebody in the first 30 seconds, you've already thought supposedly like 11 subconscious thoughts about this person. I mean, it's incredible. And I think nowadays with politics and the media, everything's even more polarizing. So like, so now it's like our guard is even higher. So as a leader, if you can develop the skill set or the muscle to suspend judgment, it'll be so much beneficial for you and for your team, because instead of like writing somebody off or kind of not putting the time or not really giving them your attention, you know, it's the idea is you can really start to, you can help somebody develop themselves and turn them around and really see them flourish, you know, just because you didn't really just put them in a box and label them and just that's it. But you're able to, you know, do that, suspend judgment.
Absolutely. No, thank you for sharing that. When you you mentioned a little bit about a new project, can you elaborate a little bit on maybe what's coming new for you?
Yeah, you know, I would say there's a lot of, and I think it first came, I think from Simon Sinek, another influencer who I learned from and just kind of see, he had this line, he was being interviewed, and it was something like, you know, what do we do this? And he gave the suggestion like, okay, be the leader. He said something like, be the leader you wish you had. And I think that is a whole, that took me down a rabbit hole just like a couple nights ago, you know, so it's like, be the leader you never had. And it's like, what are the skill sets? What are the skill sets that you didn't learn in school? What are the skill sets that you didn't learn in your first job or second job? Because so much of leadership of our behavior is learned behavior. Is we just, because we learned it from somebody else. That's how dad did it. That's how I do it, right? That's how my manager did it. That's how I'm going to do it. And it's like, it doesn't have to be that way. You can break that cycle. You can be your own person. You can be your own woman. You can be your own man. You can be the person that you want to be. When you look back on your 20, 30 year career, you're like, damn, I'm proud of what I've accomplished. And then also too, you can always, you know, it's imagine people are attending your retirement party and they're like, wow, I had, you know, Kara was one of my managers, my first job, you know, 20 years ago. And even though you haven't worked together in, let's say, 15 or so years, you still made an impact on that person's life. And so that's kind of what I'm looking at now is what are those skill sets? I've identified 7, and I'm kind of going down the rabbit hole now of that. And, you know, I'm excited to see what's going to come of it, because I take a different approach. Like one of the chapters I'm working on right now is called, you know, Tame Your Dragon. And I talk about sometimes our demons, sometimes our things that pull us away from being the best version of ourselves, vices in our life, right? Whether it's, you know, alcohol or online gambling, you know, right, things like that, or past trauma. If you had trauma as a child, you had trauma when you're in your 20s, and that shows up in the work environment, you know? And so right. I'm talking about things that normally wouldn't be spoken about like in a traditional leadership book per se, but I think it's very applicable for where we are in our world today. So.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, right? Keep changing, keep those things that are new and different in the world that we're in today are so critical for leaders and really all of us to be really thinking about and how do we be the best version of ourselves. So thank you for that. Stay tuned as after a short break, Eric will highlight some of the keys to cultivating trust and managing promises, not people. Isn't this insightful guide for all of us. So we're going to be back after a short break to learn a little bit more. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Kara Olson, Chief People Officer for Ellen Becker Investment Group. My guest today is Eric Papp, founder of Agape Leadership. He's an effectiveness expert, keynote speaker, and management trainer. So we want to turn our time, Eric, and talk a little bit about these keys to cultivating trust that's so important in the workplace and, quite frankly, just in relationships across the board. Your new book, Managing Promises, Not People, reflects on the importance of accountability, integrity, honoring one's word. And so I want to just start by talking a little bit about having you describe this gap between what people say and what people do, that's really discussed in your book, this whole gap between it and how you identify it and how you handle that as a leader.
Yes. So it's aligning our intention with our action, building trust. Where are we going to start? So let's start here, you know, consistency, right? Why is it your favorite restaurant? Why do you go to that restaurant? Why do you go to this experience over here? Is there's a level of consistency there. You know that you're going to get the same service, the same meal. You know, there's that level of consistency, level of trust. So as humans, right, even though you might not like your boss's personality, even though you might not like your neighbor's person, whatever it is, you'll respect them more if they're consistent with their word, if they do, and if what they say is aligned. That's power. That's, you're going to be, you're going to have that level of trust with that person because you're like, you know what, even though there might be odd or, you know, have a little quirks or whatever, I respect them. I trust them because what they say, they actually do. And that's the foundational principle is, as humans, we're kind of hardwired to recognize that. And we can also kind of realize, okay, when someone's saying something, but they're not following it, they're not backing it up, even though they're my boss, there's an immediate sense of distrust that starts to settle in there. And then when you have that, it makes it very tough to do great work with other people. So that's the first thing. Next thing I want to talk about is just the distinction between honoring your word versus keeping your word, because this always comes up with audience. People say, well, we, you know, Correct. You can't always keep your word. I say, hey, Kara, we're going to meet for lunch. We're going to do this. And then my kid gets sick or something happens here or my flight, whatever the case may be, if it's out of my control. We can't always keep our word, but we can honor. I can honor and say something, you know, I call, hey, Kara, this happened. You know, I can acknowledge the impact it had with you. And then let me make a new commitment to you, a new promise. And so that's the whole the concept in that, manage promises, not people.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, that I know there's a whole chapter truly around that broken promises happen, right? Both personally and professionally, you know? And so the way in which we repair that, I think that is what's really key, and acknowledging and then reestablishing, right, a new promise. And so what do you see as the ways to repair unfulfilled promises?
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So the first thing, when broken promises, the natural human instinct, like when I break a promise to you, let's say, the natural human instinct is to deflect responsibility. It's just natural. Like, oh man, like, sorry this happened, it's because of this, or because that is 100% natural, and we do it all the time. And it's okay to a certain degree, right? However, you know, if we want to be 100%, if we want to be powerful, right? Well, being powerful means we take 100% responsibility. So it's being able to acknowledge, okay, where did I overcommit? Did I give my word, but yet I kind of knew that there was going to be a low probability of following through with it because it was based on these external conditions. Oh, okay. Well, let me learn from that, you know? And so realizing that, and then realizing when you have to make that call or send that email or whatever it is, or have that conversation, that it's okay. Like it's not a reflection of you as a person. Matter of fact, it's you're improving your trust with that person because you're owning it. You're taking ownership. A lot of times, even customers, you know, when organizations try to deflect it or they don't take ownership when something goes wrong, that's when people even get more pissed off and they rebel, right? But it's, and I don't think I talk about this in the book, but like when JetBlue had their passengers sit on the jet bridge, this was, I think, a couple years ago, maybe more than that, 2009, you know, the CEO the next day or shortly thereafter immediately got out and owned the problem. It was like, yeah, we're taking ownership of that, you know, or like in the 80s when Tylenol was like, you know, something happened with that, with something I think snuck us a package in there. Anyway, They owned it and they were like, we're going to throw out all the thing. It was like, cost them a lot of money. And so people see that and they really like, damn, that's awesome. Like that person's, they own that problem. And I think that's a very attractive quality today, especially in our no accountability society that we're in, where it's like, you can always deflect it on someone else. You can always blame your parents. You can blame society. You can blame the teacher. You can blame everything else. You know, hey, it's not your fault. I mean, think about how many advertisements we have today for attorneys. You know, it's like have your feelings been hurt today at work? You know, have you been asked to work an 8-hour workday? If so, call the law offices of 1-800. I mean, we're always looking to get out of something.
Sure. Well, I think that goes to really your, you know, the difference between that keeping your promise and honoring your promise, right? And so that's really, really helpful. You know, one of my favorite chapters actually talked about coaching. I think it was called Call Me Coach in your book. You know, so I think about that, especially, you know, from the work that I do with leaders and employees. But looking back, what advice would you give really your younger self when you think about coaching?
When I think about coaching, I think about my younger self. I think about receiving it. And I think about how large my ego was. Mm-hmm. Like, and when you have a large ego, and when you have a big ego, a big ego blocks up your ears. You can't hear as good. You know, because it's like, you're like, you might be paying it, like someone might be giving you advice. And you're like, yeah, well, okay. Yeah. I'm, you know, like that's the listening that's going on in your head perhaps. So I would say that, and that still is with some leaders today, regardless of age, you know that when you're talking to somebody, they're physically there, but mentally they're not listening to what you have to say. And that's usually, like I said, ego gets in the way. Humility, right? I love the word humility. Great word, right? I mean, a Latin word, humus, of the ground or soil. So when someone says, hey, that person's a real humble person, it doesn't mean they're weak. It doesn't mean they're timid. It means that they're close to reality. Like they're really they're very close to reality. And so I think that's something that I would give myself, my younger self, is to not think that I knew it all. And I sure as hell didn't know it all. I mean, it took me a long time to get to where I am today. And I'm still nowhere near where I want to be. But, you know, hey, we're making progress every day. That's a key thing. Keeps me motivated. But yeah, that's a big thing. I still see that today. Ego is on all of us. It's still there. It's not like it goes away ever.
Oh. Right, right. Well, and I think that's, you know, you talked about it even earlier around just continuing to learn and be open to learning, you know, as a leader, as an individual, as a person, you know, to continue to be curious and continue to learn, and the difference that that really can make in your success and your success as a person. How do you define success, Eric?
You know, I heard this a while back, and I want to say it was Earl Nightingale, one of the first motivational CDs, books I came across. I think it was a tape recorder at the time my dad played for us, and it was Earl Nightingale, The Strangest Secret. And on Earl talks about, you know, success is the progression of a worthy ideal. And I love that definition. Like, if you're making progress to a worthy ideal, that's what success is. So if you're the teacher, and if you always want to be a teacher and you're a second grade teacher and you're making strides and you're becoming the best teacher, like, that's success. You're living a successful life. If you're, you know, if you're the landscaper, and if you're putting together, you know, new types of scenery and new types of arrangements, and that's what you wanted to do, you're a success. So success is the realization of a worthy ideal. And so realizing that this is something that you want to do and you're making progress and, you know, it's a great impact for others. Hey, then that's what success is.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. You know, when we come back, we're going to talk with Eric more about some advice he has for us about success and what that might look like for us. So we'll be right back after a short break. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Kara Olson, Chief People Officer at Ellen Becker Investment Group. My guest today is Eric Papp, founder of Agape Leadership. He's an effectiveness expert, keynote speaker, and management trainer. So happy to have him here with us today and sharing his experiences, especially with the number of companies he's worked with, individuals, and different industries. And so your insight has been inspiring. You were just chatting a little bit about, you know, learning and learning experiences and as leaders and individuals continuing to learn. You know, what is something maybe that you want to share with us around what you've learned in the last year?
Yeah, what I've learned in the last year stems from an accident that I had September 2nd on Saturday. I was cutting the grass. I cut my own grass. Yes. I'm now in my 40s, so I'm a homeowner, so my lawn is important to me. I never knew what it, you know, as a kid, you know, how men would get very protective of very, you know, of their lawns, and now I get that. Anyhow, now I cut my own grass. I grew up cutting grass, and I enjoy it because it's that sense of pride after you look at it. Anyhow, I had a little accident. I ran over my toes with the lawnmower, got caught. Spoiler alert, I have all my toes, so it's all good.
Good to know.
But I will ask for a 20% discount the next time I get a pedicure. We're going to see if they honor that. But anyhow, no, learning experience. So, and I think this is very applicable, right? I remember being in the hospital, and this is, and just like replaying it in my head, being like, I can't believe it. Like, you're an idiot. Like, what the hell are you thinking? This is my self-talk, right? Like, how could you do this? Like, how could you be so careful? Like, you don't even have the world's greatest insurance, Eric, because you work for yourself. So good luck, buddy. This is going to cost us now, you know, at least 10 grand, which it did, you know, or more. So this is my self-talk, right? And I remember being like, and the other side of me was like, Eric, the minute you can forgive yourself, the moment we can move on. And I thought, wow, that was profound. Like, and I was like, I forgive you. I forgive myself. I'm letting go of this. And to me, that's profound. Like, it was a profound experience because it's like, I realize, like, also there's other parts of my life where it's like I look at some of my colleagues, my speaker colleagues that have had more success than me, that have written New York Times bestsellers and things like that. And I'm like, I compare myself with them. I'm like, oh, well, I'm not as good as they are. I'm not, like, I should be there already. I should have that already. And it's like, wow, it's like the minute you can realize and just forgive yourself of that and let go of that, the moment now we can be more present, we can focus on what we can accomplish, and we can really, you know, own this moment. And so that to me was a very profound. And then also I heard something too. I think I read this somewhere. It's like, you know, that, you know, $13,000, you know, that was a $13,000 story. And so that's what that story right. cost. Like, that's what that story cost to me. So like, that's like, you know, that was a, and hey, you know, now I've also improved my coverage insurance, my health insurance and stuff. So that was the thing. But I think that's the real thing, is just forgiving yourself, right? Because I think we all have those yeah. moments of past interactions with people, things that we've either said or did. And we're like, how can I? And like, we keep replaying that. It's like, let it go. Mm-hmm. Like, let it go. Right. Like, you did. It happened. And in some cases, you know, you did the best you can with what you had. And that was it. So forgive yourself for that. Let it go. Now that you know this, now be a new person. Now do something else. So now that I know this, my wife did get me steel-toe boots when I was in the hospital, because I said, hey, in 8 weeks, I'm going to be out cutting grass. And I was. 8 weeks right. of the day, I was out cutting grass again, just not letting that grass get the better of me. It was a little painful. I was hobbling around, but I had my steel-toe boots on, so I felt secure in that regard. But yeah, so just, you know, forgive yourself, move on, and that's it.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that story. Wish you didn't have to learn it from the painful experience, but isn't it interesting where our lessons come from though, right? And that profound, hey, just let it go, forgive so that you can move on and learn from and get the insurance and steel-toed boots and all that good stuff so that you can continue to be successful. I think those are really great, great lessons. And I love that if we're open-minded enough, right, that lessons can come from anywhere, right?
Yep. And don't flip the flap. People wonder how the hell this happened probably, right? If they're listening right now, don't flip the flap while the blade is running. Don't do that. I always did it like, and it just, careless habits cause harm. And I can hear my dad and my voice being like, don't, you know, all I do is shut it off and then flip the flap, you know, brush out the grass clippings. But, you know, old Eric just think like it was an easier way to do it like that. And so I paid the price. Yeah.
Learn it, right? Exactly. Tell me a little bit, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, the number of books that you have read and, you know, movies and podcasts, and there's so much information out there. What has really significantly influenced you? And can you share a little bit more about why?
Oh man, several things. So I'm going to just touch on information, because I think information that comes at us that's very, I guess you would say, in different departments, sometimes that can be confused and that can take us off track. Like, there's a difference between being a dabbler and then going deep. Being a dabbler is someone who just reads, you know, posts or just reads headlines or just reads, scrolls through their social media feed and thinks they know now this, but they haven't read any books on the issue of whatever it is. So go deep with stuff, but go deep with what interests you. Like, go deep with what interests you. So I like biographies. I like, you know, the nonfictions, but I also read fiction books. So one of my most recent ones that really had an impact on me, and I just read this like 2 weeks ago, and it was a book called by Jerry Weintraub, and it's I Will Stop Talking When I'm Dead. And he, unfortunately, his passed away, but he was lived an incredible life as a music producer. Like, he represented Elvis. He took Elvis mm-hmm. around for tours, and he was with Colonel Tom Parker. He was one of the pallbearers for Colonel Tom Parker, who was like Elvis's business manager. And then he also produced movies like The Karate Kid and Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 12. So this guy, like, he connected old Hollywood with new Hollywood, but his lessons in there about persistence, oh my gosh, it just, like, the boldness that he had was just something was awesome. So if you're out there, like, you know, just pick up a good book, but something that you think that you're going to be interested in, something that came maybe recommended, have that first and then go deep with it, you know, and mm-hmm. then you'll enjoy it more, you know, as opposed to just reading headlines or scrolling through. So really get into something and then don't be intimidated by it. Like, you know, create it into your, you know, in your routine of when you're going to read it. Maybe it's at nighttime, maybe it's in the morning, you know, maybe you're reading a chapter a week, a chapter a day, I don't know, But as you get going, I just find that it's like people, we go on our phones so often. If you just substitute some of that for reading a good book, your life, I believe, would start to take off in a new direction.
Yeah, that's very helpful and insightful, just because there is so much information, right? And so what's a new habit to form if we haven't already, right, is to find what you're passionate about and go deep with that. And that's an interesting book. Now I want to go check out that one as well, which is great. Tell our listeners maybe a little bit more about how they connect with you or how they can learn more about your work and what you're going to be up to in your next phase.
Yeah. So my website, ericpapp.com, ericpapp.com. That's Papa Alpha, Papa, Papa. I'm on LinkedIn. So if you're on LinkedIn there, we have it connected there. I would say that's kind of the main one, the website. And then if you sign up for the newsletter, I put a newsletter out every week and just kind of different my thoughts or my view on things. I'm getting better at getting with Twitter and such. Like I'm getting better more with social media. Like I used to be on Facebook and things like that, but I find that kind of Facebook to me was like distracting a little bit too much, taking me away from, I actually took it off my phone. But so it's like those are kind of the main ones is LinkedIn, Twitter, but yeah, just ericpapp.com and drop me a line and I'd love to connect with you.
That's great. Well, before we close, maybe you could just share, is there a hobby or interest that maybe would surprise our listeners about you?
Yeah, I don't know if it would surprise people, but I do stand-up comedy when my wife allows me and when the venue that's by my house here, Side Splitters, when they have amateur hour when they have like open mic night, when they have like the 5 minutes you can do, you get 5 minute slot, pay for your drink. But yeah, that's been fun. So I've just started doing that and I'd love to do that more often, but I incorporate a lot of humor and comedy into my programs and stuff. So people kind of can, they pick up on that pretty quickly. They can see that. And then also I teach eighth grade religious education. We just wrapped up the year. That's something for me. Yeah,
definitely. Well, I think those are always interesting to hear about from others, right? As not only our work that we do, but are we also filled with some of the passion and the passionate things that we really enjoy that fill us up as well. And so that's helpful just to hear some of the things that you do. And it did not surprise me at all that it was stand-up comedy at all, which is great. I appreciate that. It's been very insightful today, Eric, and valuable information. Really appreciate you sharing your story with us today and with our listeners. So thank you very much for being our guest. Money Sense airs on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m. If you enjoyed today's show and want to learn more about EIG and our upcoming events, please visit ellenbecker.com or call us at 262-691-3200. As always, I hope that I have made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.